You're listening to.
You're listening to.
The Homo Homie Podcast.
Representing, educating, and unifying our queer comunidad.
Also, a gay craft course 101 for the hetero. I'm your host, Eric V.
And I'm your co-host, Jose Resendez.
A fun kickback podcast for all our homo homies and raza.
We invite you to download, stream, and share
to find out what's good in the hood. Hey, welcome to another episode of the Homo Homie Podcast. I'm your host, Eric V, also known as the Homo Homie. And please welcome my amazing co-host, Jose Resendez.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
And joining us back again is our co-producer and also pop culture enthusiast, Roman Navarrete.
Hi, everybody. Good to be here.
Yay, the whole gang is here.
Yes, and Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
It's the start of 2021. I'm really excited, and it's putting 2020 in the past, and this couldn't be more of a good time to, you know, start something brand new.
Right.
Before we get into the episode, I just want to make sure that for those of you who are listening, to go check out our brand new website, thehomohomiepodcast.com. Yes. We have our bios there. We also have our donations.
Yeah, a lot of donations have been coming in through over the holiday break.
Yeah, and we're really grateful, really excited. Thank you guys. It's really going to help support the podcast. So,
yep, and click the link in our bio. You'll check out all the streaming platforms that we're on and all the social media websites that we're on.
So I wanted to start off with goals. Have you guys started your goals off for the new year?
Yes. Well, you know, it's like a clean slate, right? So everyone is cliche with the New Year's resolutions. I'm over here feeling like a virgin. But I wanted to start thinking about what I want to educate myself more in this year. Mm-hmm. I felt like last year, because of 2020 and COVID, we had to relearn all about finances and hustling and our gigs and our side hustles and like how to make ends meet, unemployment, EDD, stimulus checks, all this stuff came out, you know?
Yeah, really thinking outside of the box.
Yeah.
And Roman, how about yourself? What, any goals that you started yet?
I don't think I've started them yet, but I definitely identified, you know, sort of what I want to do, some changes I want to make, you know, really kind of, I think to Jose's point, you know, staying on that hustle, staying on that grind and just sort of, you know, tackling everything that comes in the new year.
What about you, Eric?
Well,
day one of the diet?
Yes. Honestly, I made a goal to watch more LGBTQ content and, you know, get familiarized with my community. Because, you know, since starting this podcast, I've been learning so much. And Netflix and Hulu and HBO Max have been a godsend because I actually watched La Veneno. That is so good. You guys got to watch it on HBO Max. On Netflix, I have watched Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
That's gay?
Yes, it has some gay characters and lesbian characters on there.
Okay.
And also transgender characters, too.
Nice.
We also have, what else? Cobra Kai, so the Karate Kid. I watched the whole season on that. And guess what, guys? I finally watched Pose.
What?
Yes, I haven't seen
it. It's been years. It's been 84 years.
84 years. And I've been hesitant to watch it. And I've, you know, had small reservations. And you guys have been pushing me to view it, right?
Yes, me and Roman were like shook when you told us that you hadn't watched it yet. Right, Roman?
Yeah, I actually thought it was a joke.
Right. I still think you're joking. So how did you feel?
It gave me a lot of emotions, especially when I came out this year as HIV positive and letting you guys know about my status. It related so much with me. And, you know, I loved the whole fact of learning about the transgender community more in depth, the struggles that they've gone through and how they actually started the whole movement for LGBTQ rights, you know, and the whole AIDS epidemic. Yeah. And part of that is just, it just makes my heart, you know, like happy because you see the struggles and it makes you more appreciative of how our community is right now. And I know I'm late to the party, but when you guys first saw it, what were your initial reactions, Jose?
I loved it. I remember actually me and Roman went to like a screening at the LGBT center, remember? And it was a tearjerker. It was like a roller coaster of emotions. I saw myself on screen, even though I'm not part of the ballroom scene or I don't know how to Vogue or I'm not part of a house or anything like that, but I still saw like that family, you know, and it kind of reminded me of Paris is Burning. This is kind of like that second part, you know, because that documentary is pretty old and I've watched it so many times and I love re-seeing it. So just to see this like on FX and then now seeing it on Netflix, it's just so refreshing, you know, especially learning about the ballroom scene.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, really great to see a show that was inclusive of, you know, all the letters of LGBTQ. And you know, too often, I think we see transgender representation in media or, you know, on television as like the victim in SVU or something like that, where there's, you know, they're the corpse or there's something that's deviant in some way. And I really love the fact that, you know, Stephen Canals was able to create this show that really sort of dived into, you know, really deep storylines within the trans community and sort of showed that mother figure, that house figure, you know, which, by the way, as a cisgender gay male, I think I also can identify, you know, we always, when we're coming out, we gravitate towards somebody who is sort of that, you know, a big brother or, you know, somebody who takes us under their wing. And so, you know, I think it's not just for the trans community, it's for everybody. And if you haven't watched it yet, then I really do recommend that you, you know, sample this show that is critically acclaimed, gotten Emmy nominations, Emmy Award for Billy Porter, Golden Globe nominations, and you can find it on FX or you can catch it in repeats on Netflix.
And Roman, you bring up a really good point, and representation is very needed. So that's the whole point of today's episode.
Yeah, we're very lucky to have, you know, one of the actors from Pose, Johnny Sibley, mm-hmm. who had a very pivotal role in the series. And I won't take you through too much of that storyline, but, you know, his role was certainly full of meat and sort of history, especially when it comes to the AIDS storyline in the 80s.
Yes, yeah. It was super emotional. I'm a huge fan of Johnny Sibley, you know, so I'm super excited that we have him today and he's finally able to join us. And, you know, it's good to kick off the year with him, right?
Yeah, most definitely. And a lot of people know of Johnny Sibley from like social media and Pose, while others may not, you know, be familiar with him. So I know both of you are, and that's great. And you guys worked with him before. So that's awesome just to get to know him through you guys. And I like that we have him as our first guest of the new year. So we can all really get to know who Johnny is and his commitment towards the LGBTQ plus community. So we're going to go ahead, take a break, and we'll be right back with Johnny Sibley. You're listening to the Homo Homie Podcast. Okay, and we are back from the break, and Roman is going to go ahead and introduce our guest, Johnny Sibley, because he has a little background story with him. So Roman, take the floor.
Yeah, everybody. It's my pleasure to welcome Johnny to the show. You know, we are fortunate enough to have worked with Johnny in the past on a few executions. You know, Jose and I have both sort of dabbled in some social media influencer things, some events, and worked with Johnny. And I think the first time that I worked with Johnny was, you know, when the idea of an LGBTQ influencer and an LGBTQ plus warrior were sort of coming about. And that was for a campaign called I Am Jazz. And, you know, I picked Johnny as one of the influencers I was going to work with because to me, I knew that he was going to champion jazz. And I knew that he was going to connect with that story. And from that moment on, that sort of set a working relationship for the past 3 to 4 years with Johnny. So it is our pleasure to have him on this show. And we're going to get into a lot of good tidbits and a lot of backstory on Johnny and what he's up to now. And Eric, if you want to sort of start us off, you know, we can kind of dive into it.
Yeah, sure. So, Johnny, I want to start off with asking, like, do we have any pronouns that you use or?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you guys for having me. My pronouns are he, him, his. And I love a she every now and then when we're kicking.
Hey, girl. And I'm like super nervous and super excited all at the same time because when I heard that you were going to be joining us, I just freaked out. My heart's like pounding. Like I told Jose, dude, my heart's pounding. It's going to come out of my ass.
Because he just watched Pose. Like after all these years, he finally watched Pose.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah. And congratulations on that. But before we really dive into, you know, your career and your content, Tell us a little bit about who Johnny Sibley is. Give us like your ethnic background, how you grew up, where you grew up.
Well, I am right now, I'm 33 years young. I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana. And my parents were in the military, in Fort Polk, Louisiana. So that's why I was born over there. My dad is Dominican. He was born in Manhattan, which I just found out. I was like, wait, I thought you were born in the Dominican Republic this whole time, but no. And my mom is Cuban. She was born in Camagüey, Cuba. And I grew up mostly moving around until we landed in Miami, like many Hispanic families. And yeah, I went to school there, went to a year of college there, and then I moved to New York. And, you know, that's where I think I had gotten into like an acting school in Miami, and that was in New York. And I told my parents I really wanted to go, and they were like, we're not paying for an acting school, there's no guarantee. And I was like, okay, well, I'm still going to try and make it somehow. So I had a really nice professor in college tell me that I should get my start in New York before I went to LA, and it would be a better road for me. So I followed his advice, and I moved to New York and started doing my thing.
Nice. And I myself am a fellow thespian. I was in the theater for a long time. I graduated from a conservatory program, so I know the feeling. I'm what you call the triple threat: singing, dancing, and acting. So.
Hey, love that.
I mean, did you get backstage West and go through the whole cattle calls and stuff like that?
Oh, no. I mean, I did theater in high school and college, but I was never a singer. So I never went to like the open calls and stuff like that they usually do for theater. Most of the stuff I have always done has been like, if they see me and they like me, they call me. But I really have so much respect for a lot of theater actors that show up and there's like 100 people there. And it's like, I would look at that and be like, well, you know what I mean? So
I know the goal for aspiring actors is to start off with their vouchers that they get on sets and stuff like that, to solidify their SAG-AFTRA stuff. When you first got your SAG-AFTRA credentials, how was that feeling? Was that like, I'm a legit actor now?
Oh yeah. I mean, when I started in New York, I started doing anything that I could. I mean, I was a background actor for a lot of shows like Law and Order SVU, Smash, which isn't around anymore, Broad City, like a lot of shows. And I remember just being on set, like, and that was what you would talk about there. It's like, oh, are we getting our vouchers? Are we, you know, when are you SAG eligible? And I think I became SAG eligible after I did a short film, because I had gotten a couple of vouchers because I did like featured background work, mm-hmm. Which was super exciting for me, just because you get to see it in action. Like, you know, obviously waiting isn't fun, but like being able to see actors act and like directors direct was a really cool, exciting thing for like a boy from Miami to experience. So I actually didn't join the union until Pose, because I had to join. If not, I couldn't do the part. Because they have this thing where you're like a must join at some point. But I do remember those days in New York where I was like, oh, maybe today I'm going to get, you know, the voucher and I'll be SAG eligible. And, you know, it's crazy because I haven't talked about that in a long time, but it was such an important thing for me when I was first starting out.
Wow.
You know, back then when you're in New York, you're immersed in that world, you're auditioning, you're amongst all the other actors. When was that point where you thought, you know what, I want to start creating my own content? I want to sort of throw a curveball out there and sort of take things in my own hand. What led to that? And tell us a little bit about that journey right there.
Sure. I mean, like I said, you know, going to auditions and stuff in New York and like doing a lot of background work and a lot of like Discovery ID shows. A lot of the things that I'd go in for was like, you know, sexy firefighter, thug, you know, things that
I could see it.
I could play at things that I could play ethnicity wise, but not a lot of things that spoke to me as who I was, in terms of like my creative, like ideas. I mean, being gay specifically, there wasn't a lot of like, even back in 2013, 14, there wasn't a lot of, roles that we were playing, gay or Latino in that time. So it was a lot of straight roles. And I was like, but there's so many like fun things about our community that like I would love to talk about, or like that about my life that I'd love to talk about. And I think, you know, and being effeminate as well is super important, because it's like, oh, all these roles that I get called in for, I have like push it up, and I can't like be ridiculous like the people I grew up watching, like Eddie Murphy and John Leguizamo. I was like, those are the kind of people that I think are so funny because they can do both. So me creating my own content was kind of just an answer to what I wasn't being able to do in those audition rooms.
And that's how I stumbled upon you, through your content. Like watching Julissa, that popped real quick. And I was like, I'm going to click on this guy and follow him and see what he's all about. Then you brought Megan, then you brought Ina, then you brought Karen, and you have Wes. Like, you honestly remind me of a John Leguizamo, a one-man show. Like, I think you can seriously do it on your own. So, and you mentioned John, like, he's one of your aspiring mentors, right?
Yeah, I mean, John was one of the only people that I felt looked like me and was like me growing up. Like, you know, a lot of Black actors I would recognize and see myself in because they were more so like my family. And then John Leguizamo and a couple other Latino actors that were on the scene were the other like ideas of who I was as a person and like who I grew up around. So there was no way I couldn't like find that fascinating. You know, and Tom Hanks was super inspiring as well. But, you know, Tom was like of that kind of person. Yeah. Whereas John felt like, oh, my God, that's like he sounds like my Thea and like all my cousins. And, you know, so it was super exciting to see when I was a kid.
So as you were creating these characters like Julissa and Megan, were you aware that it was taking off, that people were sharing, or there was a word of mouth, you know, about you? Like, how cognizant were you during that time? And then I have a follow up to that exact question.
Yeah. I mean, when I started doing it, it came out of a place of like, I have to do this because like, I remember I'd post selfies and be like, try and be cute online. And I'm like, but that's like, that's not who I am. Like, and I remember an acting teacher, I would be in class. He was like, why don't you put that on Instagram? Or why don't you put that on the internet so people can see that side of you? And I was like, I don't know what he's talking about. Like, you know, I was just like, but then when I started doing it, and I think the real time when I like noticed that it was taking off was when people would stopping me in the street in New York, which in New York City, most people don't stop you. Like, you could be Sarah Jessica Parker and people are not going to stop you, but they would stop me and they're like, oh my God, you're the guy that does Megan, or and I'd be like, oh yes, that's me. Yes. You know, and they'd be super sweet. And I was like, okay, hold on. Like, people are watching. And you know, when you see a video go viral and it gets like a million views and 4 hours, that's a big deal when you're like working at a restaurant and you're like pointing out to your like fellow coworkers, like, my video went, and you know, of course they're like, oh, now you think you're somebody. It's like, no, it's just insane to think that I would never have thought that that would happen to me. I always thought it would happen to other people.
I love that you always bring up that photo of you opening the door of Katy Perry at a restaurant or something. Was it Katy Perry?
It was Katy Perry, Kim Kardashian. I mean, everyone.
You know, one of the reasons why I, you know, have so much respect for you, and this is like before Pose and all of that, is that during this time when you're creating this content, when I look back at that time, there weren't a lot of people of color in the, you know, the gay space who were influencers, content creators, putting their creativity out there. And for me, it really was, you know, disheartening to, especially as I started to dive into influencer marketing and work on those campaigns, that there were just white gay men. You know, it was like Tyler Oakley, Davey Wavy, you know, and I remember you from some things on Musical.ly. And I just, yeah, I remember, and I was thinking, you know, who is this guy? I was like, okay, very attractive, very talented, very funny. But you know, to do what you do is like, it takes a huge amount of intelligence. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be talented. You have to be quick thinking. You have to be smart, witty, all of it, charming. And I feel like you help change the way for so many influencers now and content creators that are POC, you know, and I remember that. And so that's why I have a lot of respect for you, but, you know, it goes way back there, you know, back at that time. So I wanted to know if you had any thoughts on that piece of it, the fact that you were entering a world that was dominated. And people say this all the time, that gay media has always been dominated for decades and decades by white gay men. And I still deal with that in my everyday work. I still deal with that. So were you aware of that? Was it something that you wanted to change? Did you, there's an amount of fearlessness that it takes to do what you did.
I think, well, first of all, thank you for saying all those kind things. It was really sweet. I think when I was starting out doing it, I wasn't thinking about the lack of representation. I mean, I knew that I didn't see a lot of people like me. I think at that time when I first started, there was like LaJuan James, like, but he was straight. And like, you know, I was just like, who are like the gay Latinos? But that isn't what pushed me to do it. What pushed me to do it was that I just needed to create and to put my work out there. Now, when I started becoming, you know, when people started watching a lot more, I started thinking about the responsibility and like the fact that I'd see other people creating and I'm like, there's no one that I see that is like me, you know? And now you go on TikTok and I mean, Latinx TikTok is the place to be. And like, you know, and I just see all these young kids like doing their thing. And, you know, not that there was no one like not doing it when I was doing it, but it did feel like I was one of the only ones at the time to be doing it. And I remember people like Latino men just sending me videos, like private videos, like, oh, look at me in a wig. I'm like, Julissa, I'm like, you should post that. And they're like, no, I would never post it. I'm like, oh my God. Okay, girl. You know, like, so, but still, even to this day, the way that, that the industry rewards a lot of cis white gay men, even in comedy and skits and stuff, is leaps and bounds bigger than a lot of the attention that I've received. And, you know, sometimes it's because the content is funnier, but also there's this idea that people can't relate to people like us. Like, I can't tell you how many white folks have told me, oh my God, Megan, that character is so funny. But Julissa, like, I don't really get it. I don't really understand. And it's because they don't understand the humor, or at least that's what they say, which is funny to me because it doesn't matter what you look like or what ethnicity you are. If you're funny, you're funny. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And there's been a lot of white comedians that like will make jokes and like, that wasn't my life. I didn't grow up feeling that way. But I still find them hilarious and their characters hilarious. But it's interesting when you're in a position of privilege where you don't have to find other people's stories interesting or dynamic. You don't really, you're like, people are quizzical about it. They're like, oh, I don't get it. It's like, okay, well, you don't need to get it. I don't get straight relationships, but I watch them for years and years and years, you know?
So do it. So, right?
Yeah, it's, I mean, you kind of, as POC, like as POCs, Latinx people, you guys know this better than anyone. It's like, you kind of just have to forge your own path and whoever gets on board, gets on board. And luckily there's been a lot of people like you who have followed me and who have really, like, I can't tell you how many brand deals and things that I've been a part of where I look at the email address and I see a last name that says Fernandez, Lopez, like, and I'm like, oh, my people are looking out for me. Mm-hmm. It's very seldom that I see like Robert Smith or, you know, and I'm like, oh, and when I do, I'm surprised. So that is something to also like put out into the world, is that we take care of our people. But I will say, even within the Latinx community, there has to be a better job of bringing up LGBTQ plus voices, because there's plenty of Latinx things that I go to and I'm like, where are we at? Where are we at? Because we're everywhere in our communities. Like, every family has one of us in there. You know what I mean? So it's like, there's so much work to not only do with the community outside of us, but even within our own community. So
I know, like, you lived in Miami, then New York, and now LA. Is it the same vibe in all markets? And also, what made you move to LA from New York? What was the deciding factor?
So I moved to LA from New York about 3 years ago. And that really was just part of my like trajectory in terms of like, oh, I'll do 5 years in New York and then I'll do, I don't know how many years in LA and see how it goes. And so I just basically followed that timeline that I made for myself. I spent 6 years in New York. But the markets, I would say, are very, LA is just huge. Like there's room for so many different things in LA. And like, there's things that happen here. I'm like, oh my God, that happens here too. New York is a lot more, you know, theater based. And, but really the only place, and Miami has its own thing, but Miami really feels like a different beast. And it really feels like it's only for us mm-hmm. in terms of industry down there. But even so, it's like, I always say within the Latinx community, media wise, there is more of an emphasis on white, Mexican, you know, Venezuelan. If you look white, you're getting more roles. And I mean, growing up watching Univision, Telemundo, I was like, I don't see no Dominicans on there. So, you know what I mean? So the markets, they're different, but they're all the same in a capacity, you know?
Yeah.
So we want to dive into Pose and how that all came about. And I know you were in LA for a little bit of time before you, you know, had to go audition for Pose and all that. Can you take us through that, you know, sort of timing of it all and what role you were auditioning for and how that all came about?
Yeah. So the November before audition start, or audition started in like a November because they were about to start filming. And we had just done an off-Broadway show called Street Children, which was very similar to Pose. It was about like, you know, the ballroom kids on the pier. MJ Rodriguez was in it as well. And we did our own show. And then like little after that, Ryan Murphy comes out with Pose, a show about ballroom. And I remember calling my agent and just be like, I just did this play. I want to be a part of this show no matter how. I don't care if I play the janitor. Like, I want to be a part of this show. Because when I watched Paris is Burning in high school, I was like, why is this not a show on TV? So I was like, I have to be a part of this show somehow. So I had auditioned twice in New York when I was still living there. And as soon as I moved to LA, I think it was that March, that I got another audition and they're like, oh, they want to see you again. Because the first time I came in, they're like, wait, we want to wait for something a little bit bigger for you, which they never say, which was like, oh, wow, that's so great. Mm-hmm. And I was like, watch, when I move to LA, I'm going to book something for Pose. And that's exactly what happened. I auditioned for Costas and I remember putting it on tape and I was like, you know what? I was very low. It was a very hard time for me. Like, you know, a lot of actors, obviously, you know, very little money in the bank, working a couple jobs. And I was like, you know, whatever, if I get it, I get it. If I don't, I don't. And I got it. And I was like, okay. And then, so I had to fly back to New York and stay for 2 or 3 months while I was filming. I mean, I was only in 2 episodes, but because of my character's journey, I had to stay on through the whole thing and lose like 30 pounds and stuff like that. So, but it was very, very exciting.
How did you lose 30 pounds?
Well, I wouldn't recommend the way I did it to everyone. I did see a doctor, but it was, I was like, I have this strict diet that I was like very angry all the time. And I lost a lot of like my muscle mass because the diet that the doctor put me on was for me to look as skinny as possible and like, and not in a good skinny way. Right. Not like, you know, I was like, they wanted me to look gaunt. So that plus the prosthetics we used, worked. But I will say, like, I ate so much after I finished rapping that I gained like 40 pounds back.
And I want to respect you for taking on that role because I related to it so much. I just recently came out last year with my HIV status. And I mean, I've been positive for 14 years going on 15. And watching your scenes and just watching the whole thing in general just made me really appreciative of... Sorry. No crying. Okay. Made me really appreciative of the struggles that people had gone through for us to be here today, you know, and for you taking on that role, like how was the preparation and being a patient in the 80s? Like, what did you learn about all of the way, it was handled back then and the stigma?
So for me, even just reading for the role, like when I did the audition, I got very emotional because of the history and, you know, all of that stuff. I used to go to acting class in the LGBTQ center in New York, where it was the St. Vincent's Hospital, where a lot of our people died in the 80s. So every time after class, we'd do this like little, it wasn't a prayer circle, but it was like a circle to honor the people that had come before us, because it was an acting class for LGBTQ plus people. So getting the role just felt like such an honor to be able to tell the story of a Dominican gay man that died of AIDS in the 80s. And even though it's a fictional character, there's tons of people that died. So when I was doing the research, because I wanted to be as accurate as possible, just as, you know, an actor, mm-hmm. there wasn't a lot of source material to look for people that were like us that had died in the 80s. And, you know, not because there weren't any, but because, you know, the stories that have been told have been, you know, The Normal Heart, Larry Kramer, which is about cis gay white men. So I didn't really know where to look except for YouTube, where I found a lot of, you know, old ballroom clips where they would honor the people that were from the scene. And like, that was the closest thing I got to people that look like me, that their stories were told. So that made it even more important, because I was like, okay, so this will be one of the first representations of like a Latinx, you know. Pedro Zamora is one of the only people that I knew, and he was an actual, you know, person. It wasn't a fictional character. Noah's Ark was another show that I got to see, mm-hmm. you know, that stuff being discussed. But this was, I was like, I felt like it was a big responsibility, even if I was in just two episodes, to tell this story with the heart that it deserved. And yeah, it was just such an honor. Even like when I was preparing my lines because we shot the first season in an actual hospital, I just felt like an energy and like an importance with it that really took me there, I guess.
Thank you, Johnny, for taking the time to prepare for that role as accurate as you could. And I think that is like the heart of the show right there, you know. And I know that there's been a lot of recognition around that character, that role, and just working with Billy, because Billy got a lot of accolades from it as well. Can you tell us anything like a fun scene or a special moment, maybe between you and like Billy or Sandra, or just on set?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with Sandra. Sandra was, you know, I mean, iconic, Sandra Bernhard. Like, mm-hmm. when I found out that she was going to be the nurse, I was like, oh my God, what? Like, when I found out Billy was going to be my boyfriend, I was like, oh my God, that's so amazing. He's, you know, legend on Broadway. Like, he's been he's done music, everything. So I was very nervous going in, because it was the biggest thing I'd ever done. And, you know, sometimes you always get those imposter syndrome things where you're just like, there's a lot of big people here. Like, I don't know if you're cut out. And I just like went in, I was like, you know what, this is where I'm supposed to be. And I remember one of the first things Billy said to me, we like met and we were, you know, I was already in my makeup in my hospital chair. He's like, good thing you're cute, because they didn't let me pick what my boyfriend was going to look like. And that's funny. I just thought that was so sweet. And yeah, just all the moments on set. Billy is he's a star. He's a diva. He is, you know, he is so talented and he's such a force. So just watching him work was super special to be able to like see that, because you feel like you're just watching a masterclass of someone who's been in the industry and doing it for a long time. And then Sandra was, I feel like she really took her role seriously, because she would like rub my hand when like the cameras weren't even on us, so that like to give me that feeling like I was being taken care of by her, the nurse. And like, she was so wonderful. And I mean, I was not nice to look at on set. I was, you know, I try to joke around and smile so everyone would forget about the makeup. But when you look at someone that looks like they're dying, it's like very hard to be, you know. So she was super sweet, and she was so sweet. She tweeted when that episode came out that me, Billy, and MJ deserved Emmy nominations and awards. And that was, I mean, just to hear that from an icon like Sandra Bernhard was super cool.
Yeah, I do remember that. You know, it's true, because, you know, as an actor knows, it's who's in that scene with you, and it takes two to sort of tango like that. And, you know, a lot of people will credit that scene of you in the hospital bed as the scene that sort of helped him win that Emmy. So I've heard that before about you and all that. So we want to move a little bit along here and kind of see, how has life changed for you after Pose? We know we're in this pandemic, so obviously auditions and, you know, during COVID and everything has sort of been a little bit different, but we want to hear a little bit about that from you right now, and then also this new gig with Logo TV and how that came about.
Yeah. I mean, since Pose, it's very interesting because you're on one of the hottest shows in the world, and you know, that's like award nominated and winning, and like people from the show are winning, and that doesn't really change your life. I mean, it did change my life. I've had a lot more opportunities, but it's not like I've Pose was the last big thing that I did. You know, I've been on other things that have been smaller, but as an actor, you're always like, okay, what's the next step?
Right.
So I was in Pose last year as well, but since then, because of COVID, you know, the auditions were very scarce. I mean, I think I've had like 10 all year, which is like unheard of. But I will say I am a part of a new show that I can't talk about yet, but I will say that there is a new show in the works.
Any hints to what it is? At least something?
I'll just say it's on a streaming platform.
Okay.
One of the many streaming platforms, but it's a good one. But I'll you know, come out with that soon. But Logo,
Veneno part two.
I know. I was like, oh, I wish I could say something and not get in trouble. But Logo came about, and it's funny because as an actor, I'm like, oh, I can't do unscripted television or be a host of anything. And I think this year kind of taught me, like, you can do whatever you want. The world could end tomorrow. Do what you want to do. Say yes. You know, I've always wanted to do like a podcast or like a thing, and like it's never really happened. And then a friend of mine who is a producer on the show, on the Logo live show, messaged me and he's like, how would you feel about being a host? I was like, let's talk about it. So he called me and he's like, what would a show that you would host look like? And I was like, okay, well, this is what I would like. I would want LGBTQ+ people where we get to talk about more than just the trauma that it is being us. I want to talk about like what you're working on, like what's your favorite color, like what albums are you listening to? The same thing that cis straight people get to go on Jimmy Fallon and talk about, like, you know, their funny anecdotes about like their anniversary or something like that. I'm like, I want us to be able to have a space where we can kiki and have fun, but also have a place for justice and important things like politics and stuff like that. So they're like, great, we love that idea. And, you know, that's how the show came to be. And like, I gave them a list of like who I'd love to see on the show. And there's like names that are big and small, because I'm all about bringing people into the industry rather than like, oh, we only need big names. It's like, you know.
Who are some of those names? Who are some of those people on your wish list?
There's a lot of people. I mean, they were like, who's a big person that you don't think we can get and that you'd want on the show? I was like, Ricky Martin. Like, I want to talk to him, you know? And then like just people like friends of mine, that aren't even media personalities, that are trainers. Like, I'm like, we could fill it with so many different people, but then you give it to production and they talk about what they want the show to look like. And, you know, they make their calls, and sometimes the big people say no. And then sometimes, you know, the big people say yes. And sometimes the people that you think would say yes are like, oh no, I can't do it this week. So,
Our fingers are crossed for Ricky Martin.
Yeah, literally. If you ever want to be a guest co-host, you're more than welcome to join us anytime. Okay. This is your house.
Thank you. I love it.
We're gonna go ahead and take a little break, and we want to get to know more about your activism and what you're doing in the community, and seeing where things are going for you now, and where do you see things going in the future. So we'll be right back, and you're listening to the Homo Homie Podcast with Johnny Sipp. Hey. And And we are back from the break. We have our guest, Johnny Sibley, with us. And things were getting very interesting. He was telling us about his life story and his acting career. And we want to dive in deeper and get more into his activism.
Yeah, you know, activism has just been getting more and more part of our DNA. And I think we're seeing more and more people come out in our community and, you know, sort of stand up for what's right, stand up for each other. And when I think about activism and I think about the notion of an LGBTQ warrior, you know, we hear that phrase sometime and we've been playing with that here on this show a little bit. You know, I think about people in the community who lift each other up, who can sort of inflict that title LGBTQ warrior among somebody else. And, you know, going back to your show, recently I caught an episode in which you were talking to Stephen Canals and Wilson Cruz. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna be honest, I missed the Stephen live portion and I caught the tail end of Wilson's because I was actually doing an interview with another LGBTQ warrior at the same time. And that was Carmen Carrera. Mm-hmm. And we got off the 45-minute interview and then I turned on my Instagram and saw that you were live. And I was like, okay, who's on his show today? And I get into this conversation that you're having with Wilson. And I thought, oh my God, this is like, you know, I'm going from warrior to warrior, like, you know. And you asked Wilson about who he would stand, you know, who he would lift up and who he is in awe of. And he mentioned, you know, a good friend of mine, you know, that we're friends, Daryl Stevens. Mm-hmm. And you and I have had conversations about Daryl when you started to do some stuff with him and we talked about all that. But I'm watching this and I'm getting very emotional because I'm seeing Wilson tear up and give Daryl props. I'm seeing you tear up at Wilson. I'm tearing up, you know, and it's very emotional. And when that all finished, I called Daryl and I said, did you know what just happened right now? And he's like, no, what? And I said, and I explained to him and he was just like, oh my God, you know, and he had to go and like find it. And then he like texted me and was like, I'm crying right now, you know? And I was mm-hmm. like, it's just, and I thought, and that was a very special day to me because when I think about lifting up and that activism, you know, you are at the forefront. You've always been sort of at that forefront and you've been fearless in that. And for an actor, you know, somebody who has to go audition, who has to build relationships with casting directors and production companies and execs, a lot of actors will play it safe. They may not go out there and rattle cages and you know, and you've never been that way. And I wanted to know, like, is that ever been a thought, a concern? Like, it, you know, do I need to play it safe? Am I going to get that role? And one thing that comes to mind is I remember watching something on your feed where they were protesting us at Pride or something. And you go right in the middle and you start twerking. Mm-hmm. And you know what? To me, like, this boy is fearless. He is fearless. He is a warrior. He is doing more good for our community than a lot of people even know. And I just wanted to get in that mind of yours and see like what fuels that. And are you ever hesitant to hold back or have you always been like this fearless warrior?
Well, no, I have not always been a fearless warrior. That's definitely for sure. And many times I don't feel like I am. I know that part of the reason I go so hard is because I didn't go hard at all when I was growing up. And like, I just allowed people to tell me who I was, to push me around and allow it to do it to other people. And you get to a certain age where you're like, I can't live out the rest of my life the way that the beginning of my life was. So for me, especially being a queer, like, man, I have no choice but to speak the truth. And the truth is that other people need champions. And I, you know, not to say that I'm a champion for anyone, but when I see injustice, it drives me crazy. I remember when I used to work at a restaurant in New York, one of my managers told me, because I'd always, when something wasn't fair, I would speak up about it. And I'd be like, you know, this isn't fair. And he's like, you know, Johnny, no one likes a squeaky wheel. And I'll always remember that, because instead of taking in what I was saying was unfair, he's like, all you are is loud and obnoxious. And that's how a lot of people see people that stand up for justice, is loud and obnoxious without really understanding the message. Until you have things like what happened this year with George Floyd, and, you know, a lot of people just coming to the forefront. But while there's people that have been doing it for years, it's so funny, specifically my trans brothers and sisters, who I have been fighting, whether online or at, you know, house parties, other gay men, to say that trans people are deserving of our support and our love and our camaraderie. And now I'm seeing those same people say, you know, trans lives matter. And while part of me is like, bitch, I've been told you that since 2000 and, you know, whenever ago. But that's the thing. Like, for me, it's not about, you know, when you get in line, it's the fact that you do get in line. And especially if you have any kind of position of or platform where people are watching you and paying attention. It's like people are like, oh, you know, put a wig back on and be funny. We don't want to hear you talk about Black Lives Matter. It's like, well, I have no choice but to talk about Black Lives Matter because of the people that I love in my life and all the people that I don't even know that I have a responsibility toward. Like, for me, I just don't see any other way but to stick up for other people. Whether I had a platform or not, injustice is injustice. And of course, there are times where I'm like, oh, I wonder if a producer is going to see how I told, But honestly, at the end of the day, if a producer doesn't want to work with me because I stuck up for someone or because I said, stop killing queer people, then I don't want to work with that fucking person. So it's just, it is what it is. You know, I don't speak out as much as I used to, because guess what? There's also a lot of people that I do believe need to do better at speaking up. There's a lot of cis white gay men that need to do better at speaking up for people like me, for people like my Black brothers and sisters, for people like my trans brothers and sisters. And, you know, because sometimes we don't have the option to sit back and be like, oh, well, let someone else take care of it. We have to take care of it for ourselves. So I try and speak up when I can, but I also like make sure to take care of myself too, because everything affects me. Like, even this past weekend with the gays over COVID thing, I'm like, I have to tune out for a little bit, because I get very like, and I want to fix everything, but it's like, you can't fix everything. You can only do your best, you know? So.
Yeah. I've been following that gays over COVID account for a while. It's hilarious, but yet so, so sad. Do you feel it's crazy. Do you feel like, influencers, you know, that word, or content creators, with a big following, sometimes they say like, well, you know, I'm not trying to be anybody's role model, or like, why is it my responsibility? I'm doing beauty tutorials or how to, you know, mukbang or whatever. Do you feel, especially for our QTPOC people, do you feel like it's a responsibility that they must speak out and that they must stand up for these missions and these causes?
No, I don't think so. I do think though, that if you're not going to educate yourself and you're not going to do the work to help educate your followers, then you should help bring in somebody that has done the work, that does know what they're talking about, and give them an opportunity to speak. You know what I mean? Like, it costs you nothing to do an Instagram live with a Black Lives Matter activist to say what's going on in the world. You could be a beauty influencer and still have people on your channel, in your sphere, that are helping your followers understand why we need to do better as a community or as a people. You know, I didn't go to school for the shit that I tweet. Like, I didn't go to school, but I know people in my life, and I've had a lot of conversations because I've been very curious about other people's journeys, struggles, traumas, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, some people just aren't curious and don't care about anything but what they're doing. But at the end of the day, there are people watching those influencers and putting money into the pockets of those influencers that don't look like them, that don't have the same experiences as them. And they want to feel seen just like they're seeing the influencer, you know, because there was a point where the influencer had nothing but an iPhone or a small camera. And it doesn't matter how big you get. Like, it doesn't matter how big I get. I still owe it to everybody to be the best me I can be. And for me, that is sticking up for other people, especially the bigger the voice you have.
And speaking of social media, like, cancel culture has been good and bad, you know, like there's different opinions about it. And I'm just curious from a marketing perspective, because this is what like me and Roman do for a living. Is there sort of like a checklist or something that you run by with your manager and your team when a brand reaches out, like let's say like a fast food chain or an automobile brand or a clothing brand, and you're just like, I want to know some history here. Like, are they with us? Are they for us? Like, does this align with my brand as Johnny? And also as a character from Pose and just like your career in general?
Yeah, I think for me, when brands reach out, one, it has to speak to you as a person, like first and foremost. And then, you know, sometimes you make mistakes and like companies will do things that you're not aware of, but your followers will be. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, I like even stuff that I haven't been paid to do, let's say, like I'll talk about, you know, a brand of like something that I like. And they're like, did you know that that brand is run by, you know, a conversion therapy? I'm like, oh shit, no, I didn't. But now I know. You know, with cancel culture, or, you know, what, and I like to call, a lot of times I like to call it accountability culture, because when people see like concerted like efforts to change and to do better, then I don't think people are so willing to cancel. But because so many people are quickly defensive and like, I didn't do anything, then people are so like, I'm going to cancel you. But I think just like any business person, like when you're taking on brand partnerships, you do have to do the research and what you're getting yourself into. Like I remember I've done 2 years of an Abercrombie campaign for Pride. And I think years ago, the old CEO had said something that was fat shaming and, you know, body shaming to a lot of people that wore Abercrombie. And he's like, that our clothes aren't for them. And, you know, someone, when I posted my Abercrombie thing, people were like, oh, you know, Abercrombie doesn't support different people, different bodies. And I was like, and I, you know, I had done the research by that point. I was like, yes, that is what one of the people at the company said, and he is no longer part of the company, and they're trying to do better to make it for everyone.
Right.
So like, you know, there's always things like that, but I'm also, I'm very willing to like talk to when you approach me in a way that's not like, you're supporting this company, you're a piece of shit. It's like, okay, well, you called me a piece of shit, so there's no conversation. Like, you want to disrespect, we're not going to have the conversation. But if you do want to talk about it, or if you do have a concern, by all means. But because people are on the internet, I always say they're always behind the keyboards trolling, you know, because some people don't actually want to have a conversation, they just want to fight. And usually, yeah. I think I've been doing this long enough to know who wants to fight and who wants to actually understand.
You know, I'm glad you brought up about the trans community. There was a part in the conversation we were talking about Pose. I wanted to ask you about that as well, because I personally feel that, you know, shows like Pose, you know, the increase of visibility in pop culture has helped. And it shouldn't be that way, to be honest. But, you know, I remember, you know, back when I was younger, that there was such a silo between cisgender gay men and the trans community. You know, I remember specific incidents, you know, and in, even in clubs and all of that. And I think that now that it's more, you know, in pop culture and more popular, we've sort of bridged that gap. And so I thank Stephen, you know, Canals for things like that and sort of helping to bridge that gap. You have always been an advocate for the trans community. You've always been there to educate, to support. You know, I love when I see interaction between you and Laith. You know, I think I've told you this, is I always think of you guys at the same time, whether I'm looking at a campaign or I don't know, maybe it was because I met you guys sort of at around the same time, same campaign. And then I remember one event I did for the Gianni Versace show at Newhouse. You brought Trace Lizette, and I got to meet her there. And I also had the pleasure of meeting her at another event when I was with Daryl. But Can you talk a little bit about those relationships and where did they stem from? And, you know, have you been also educated and brought along by your trans brothers and sisters, you know, whether it's in a deep conversation or when you guys are out somewhere or back in the day before red carpets, you know what I mean? Before you and Trace were on red carpets, before you and Laith were, you know, where did that all come about? And if you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, I've always seen trans people in our community, you know, even in Miami where there was trans women that ran the clubs or performed in the clubs, it was always, they were never not part of the community. So this idea that like trans people just like, oh, now they're getting their due. It's like they've been here and they've actually been doing the work that a lot of us, and I say us, not me, but like, a lot of the cis gay men have not had to do because they have a certain level of privilege, even within our own community. But that same acting class I was talking about earlier is where I met friends like Trace, Lissette, and Laverne Cox. And, you know, a lot of people that are in the industry, Jamie Clayton as well. There's tons of people that are from that class that are working and in the industry now. But Trace and I had a different friendship. Like she took to me, we took to each other, like, you know, brother and sister right away. Like I was like her little brother, you know, my relationship with Trace is very different than the relationship I have with a lot of the rest of my friends, because a lot of my friends, I feel as though I am the mom or the dad or like, you know, kind of, you know, I just have that feel. But with her, it's a totally different feeling. I feel like the son, I feel like I'm always like, yes, mom, like, you know, because of her breadth of experience, life experience. And we, I mean, way before we were like on a red carpet, we were roommates in Brooklyn, in Bushwick. And, you know, we'd ride the train together. And there were a lot of conversations that we had. Like, I remember one time she called me out because I said, you know, women should dress up. Women should, if they're going to go out to a nice event, they should, you know, put on their tacones, they should like wear a dress, they should, you know, they should look presentable. And she said, you know,
okay, Cuban.
Yeah, she's like, that's you as a cis gay man thinking that, you know, that's your misogyny talking. And I was like, oh. But, you know, it's in those times where I've learned a lot more about my sisters and like, you know, and just even conversations about her story and, you know, being in that class, you really do get a quick understanding of what it means to be a trans person in this country, you know, in the industry. And while obviously my learning never stops because I'll never be trans and I'll never quite understand that their life, I can, because of knowing trans people and loving trans people, you know, and that's the thing also, like a lot of my gay friends, when I first started hanging out with Trace or just having trans friends or non-binary friends, they're like, are you trans? Like, do you want to be trans? And I was like, it gags me that you guys think because you have trans friends, you must want to be trans. Wow. Yeah. That is insane. That's the same thing they told us growing up, that, you know, if you have a gay friend, you must want to be gay. It's right. Like, no, we can have friends from everywhere, you know, so
or you're going to catch it.
For me, yeah. I've learned, you know, and Laith, I remember seeing Laith on magazines in New York and be like, oh my God, what a hottie, like, you know, and it wasn't until I moved to LA that I met him, like, just out. I don't know if it was with Trace, but it could have been. We were just out, and he's always so kind and so sweet, and I actually just saw him on the street. I was, like, taking a picture, and he, like, drove by in his car. But every time I see him, it's such a great time, too. Like, I remember before the pandemic started, me, Trace, Isis, King, and Laith all went out to, I think it was the Abbey, and we just had like a night of dancing and fun. But I've learned a lot of lessons, and my trans sisters, I always say this, my trans sisters have supported me and lifted me up in ways that no gay men in my life have ever done. I've never felt the judgment, the kind of like bitter queenness, the competition that sometimes you get with gay men, which I don't feel, but you just get it sometimes. And my trans sisters have never been that. And I've learned so much from them. And I'm so happy that the world is catching up and starting to understand that, you know, trans women are women, non-binary people exist, and they deserve to be you know, that there's just so many things about where we are today versus where we were just even, I don't know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that is super exciting. But it's also like the death rates are still very high. And, you know, with great exposure comes great responsibility to like make sure that that changes. And that really begins with us as cis men and, you know, especially conversations with our families, because that's where you really, you know, because conversations within community is fine. But when I talk to my uncles and my dad and my, you know, about trans people and about, you know, non-binary people, that is really moving the needle, because then they can take that into their lives. Like I remember with Pose, my mom called me and said, what can I do to better assist trans people in my day-to-day work? And she works, you know, in the government. So it's just things like that, that really do move the needle forward.
And I really want to thank you for advocating for our trans siblings, brothers and sisters, and you know, always supporting them and help removing that stigma, because it like you said, it's within our communities where if you're with somebody, oh, you automatically want to be like them. No, it's not that. We're all human. I mean, we have to show compassion. Right. That's what our job is here to do, show compassion and uplift everyone.
And I always say, like, and if I, and I could never be trans because I just don't have that amazingness. I'm just, you know what I mean? It's like, it's taking away this idea that like, oh, that's a bad thing. Like, you know what I mean? That's the way the question is presented. It's like, and if I was, that'd be fierce, but I'm not, you know what I mean? Like,
and I want to end off on a high note, since we had a horrible 2020 year last year, and we are on a brand new start in 2021, fresh year, out of the box. And I want to know, Johnny, what's your hope for our community in 2021?
For 2021, I would love to see new leaders emerge. You know, someone always asks, who are my heroes in the community? And, you know, I could say like a lot of names, a lot of famous LGBTQ plus people, but for me, the people that are my heroes are the people that don't have names and recognition within the community, working at the LGBTQ center, at these nonprofits that are really getting kids off of the street, are saving families from throwing their kids out of homes. Those are the people that I feel deserve these positions of power, because it's very easy for, you know, me to make some funny videos and people to be like, oh my God, we want you to be the president of da da da. It's like, bitch, I don't know nothing about being a president of nothing. Like, give me a wig, we're good. But the people that deserve these positions and these, you know, the things that are going to change where we are as a community are the people that have really been putting in the work every day. And I'll shout them out, but I can't be them. And that they're so important to our community.
Well, thank you so much, Johnny. I really am blessed and I'm glad that you are here with us today. Thank you, Roman, for bringing Johnny through and having him come and be a part of the podcast. You know, I mean, that's what we're here. We're here to lift up our urban queer Latinx community.
And can I say something really quick? What you all do is super special and important. Like I never really understood until I started doing the Logo Live show, all the work that goes into not only writing the questions, but doing all of what you're doing right now. It's hard. Like, and it's like, it makes you nervous and you like, just want to do a good job. Right. And like, I just really commend you. When I was like, oh, I'm going to be on the other side, I'm like, oh, thank God.
It's a lot. So, take my bra off.
And I'm learning day by day. And I'm learning through these two, through Roman and Jose. They keep teaching me and I teach them. So we're all collaborating with each other and growing. And that's what's the beauty about doing this together. You know, I'm not alone. And I'm really grateful for them to be in my life. So,
Oh, I love that. Well, grateful to have you all.
And we have this segment called On the Record, where our guest gets a chance to make an announcement, setting the record straight on something or something that people assume incorrectly about them. It's just whatever in general, if you want to get something off your chest. So
it could be political, religious, sex, controversy, a conspiracy theory, spiritual, you know, anything.
Mm-hmm. So take it away.
This is Johnny Sibley, and I'm on the record with the Homo Homies. I just wanted to bring light to the idea that it is okay to love on each other. In, I think a lot of times within the, especially cis gay men, there's a lot of bitterness, a lot of cattiness. And I will say it's good to look at your best friends in the eye, your friends in the eye, and say, I love you. and you're doing great. Because I know it's very fun to be like, girl, you need to get it together, da, 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 and like have that kiki. But I also think it's super important to hug your friends. I mean, you know, if you can, it's a pandemic right now, but I think I used to do this thing called Love Your Queer Brother because I thought it was super important for us to uplift each other and not wait for other people to do it, because a lot of times they won't. And I think we got to start at home before we can expect other people to love us the way that we should be loving each other. So that being said, I love you guys. And I'm so happy that you're in this world and you're doing the work that gay Latinos need to see and we deserve to see and the representation that we need.
Yay! All right. Thank you so much, Johnny. We appreciate everything. Like, you said, and just again, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So where can people find you on social media? I know that we're going to tag you, but where can they find you?
Yeah, my Instagram is at Johnny Sibley, the same as all my socials, TikTok, all the things. And I host a show on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, called Logo Live. So check it out. And I'll be on your TV screen soon enough, but I won't say when.
Awesome. And that was Johnny Sibley. Bloop. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Homo Homie Podcast. What an amazing interview with Johnny Sibley. Like, how cool is that to hear about his journey of what he went through and how he got to where he is today, going from Pose to now starting on Logo TV and possibly other things that we'll be seeing him in the future.
Yeah, I think he's full of talent. I think that he's full of passion. And I loved that we were able to bring him as the first guest of 2021 and sort of look to, you know, what do we want for the LGBTQ community for 2021? What kind of hopes, what kind of support are we giving each other? You know, and I feel that Johnny Sibley is the perfect LGBTQ warrior, the perfect, you know, ally to everyone in the community, outside the community. And we had a really good time. I mean, Eric, did you enjoy sort of learning a little bit more about Johnny? I mean, Jose and I have worked with him in the past. We've met him in the past. You know, what were your thoughts about Johnny?
Well, first of all, super humble, super sweet. He talked from the heart and you really got a sense to feel his passion behind what he does. And I don't mean the acting part, although he loves doing that. I mean, the activism part, like the love that he has for his friends, Tracy, Laith, Isis, the way he talked about, you know, defending them and standing up for them. I mean, that's what we need more in our community. And it's like he said, it starts with us. It starts by just being there for everyone. And that's what I want to see in 2021.
Especially after the 2020 that we had, I think that things like COVID-19 and Black Lives Matter and the election, yeah. These three, you know, moments that happened in 2020 really opened up everyone's eyes. And it's like, we need to stand up for our own. We need to stand up for others as well, because, you know, times are unpredictable and it's not safe out there. And we just have to take care of our own. So I feel like 2020 really set up 2021. And so hopefully this year is full of more blessings. And like Roman said, it's great to have a role model and someone like Johnny Sibley to look up to, not only for his entertainment and talent, his laughs, you know, but also as a prime example of someone in the community that is doing something.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, it was important, I think, for us to bring him on, because I really wanted the community to know and meet somebody who has that heart, who has that passion, who is uplifting our own community. And sometimes we miss that, you know, we think, oh, you know, he's an actor, he's got all this success, whatever, or he's, you know, very attractive and all of that. But, you know, we miss the part that, you know, this guy's on the front lines fighting for us, you know, using his platform, using that activism, crossing picket lines, you know, things like that, and really sort of, you know, sticking his neck out. And you know, I really wanted to show that side. And so I think that, you know, it was great to have him talk about, you know, specifically things like, you know, supporting the trans community too, because I feel like there's more that cisgender men can do, gay men can do, besides just watching Pose. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
They truly want to support the trans community. And so, you know, it was great. Really good, really good evening tonight.
And to all our listeners out there, if there's someone in the community that you would like for us to highlight, like, please let us know. You know, I know that there's a lot of people, a lot of folks that are doing something for our community, and we would love to showcase them. So make sure you're following us on social media at the Homo Homie Podcast. You'll find links to follow all three of us and Johnny as well. And also take advantage of our voicemail feature where you could drop us a line and be featured in a future episode, and check out our new website at thehomohomiepodcast.com.
Yeah. And let us know what your hope is for 2021. So leave it in the comments, and we look forward to hearing from you. All right, guys. Well, thank you, Johnny Sibley, for joining us. And thank you, Roman, for bringing Johnny by and being our correspondent for our entertainment portion of our episodes. Thank you, Jose, for always being there and helping me through this. And also just thank you to the listener for supporting, being there, and enjoying our podcast. All right, guys. Well, remember to always be good or be good at it, but be safe. Love you. Bye.
Bye, guys.